437-2423 for a free booklet on caring for your loved ones from Alzheimer's Disease Research. 1-800-437-2423.
This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk, with Don Soa and Donna Soa Allard.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
With market insights and so much more. Talk to Don and Donna now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa and Donna Soa Allard.
Well, we're back. Donna, you're here. Thanks so much.
I'm here. I'm sorry I was not here last week, but I'm here today.
We want to reassure our listeners who I did receive several complaints. They said, "What's going on here? You know, they're paying the big money, and they're only getting half a dollar's worth." You know.
Well, it was good things going on. My husband was away snowmobiling, I had to hold things down, and it was my daughter's 6th birthday, so we went out to dinner that night as well. So.
Oh, so
my time spent away was well spent.
So it was okay for her grandfather to be missing, you know.
She said you could handle it.
I could handle it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, the end result of all of this is that as wonderful as the month of January has been, ultimately, after your not being here last week, the market has suddenly gotten into a period of extraordinary volatility. I think investors are feeling a lack of confidence when Donna Allard's not on the air.
You know, it's interesting you said extraordinary volatility because we are still up significantly year to date, even after yesterday's drop of, I think it was 177 on the Dow, in today's drop of about 362. So we saw 2 days with significant drops, and they really are juxtaposed against a year where we saw very, very little volatility at all. So we didn't just see, 2017 wasn't just a year of significant gains. It was a year of really calm, significant gains, much calmer than usual. It was historically low volatility. And then we really saw the same thing continue through this month. So here we are getting to the end of the month. And in a conversation I were having earlier, you said, you know, here we are, even with these 2 days where we did see significant drops, today's drop was, 1.3% on the S&P, I'm sorry, on the Dow. Seeing that still has us at a point where our returns are close to what we're expecting for the full year. So, I mean, yeah. it was supposed to happen, right?
Yeah. No, it's an odd dynamic. The index itself, and I love the way the financial media talks about it. Falling for a second day as the first major sell-off of the new year. I'm going,
it's stocks it's tumbling,
only,
right?
It's only
they
January.
Yeah.
How many weeks did we have to have? So of the first 4 weeks of this entire year, we've had
two bad days.
We've had two pretty bad days. But, ultimately in the end, people are going to look at it. And as with you, this is the time of year that money managers will be doing a lot of year-end reviews. You know, I have a lot of clients either calling in or coming in to sit down and look. And it's interesting. Everybody seemingly is very happy after a extraordinary year like last year.
People are cautiously happy. We say cautiously optimistic. I'd say they're also cautiously happy thinking about last year.
Well, first of all, they're getting a lot of feedback from the politicians and the president and everybody else about as to say, people try to explain, well, why was 2017 such a strong year? But I think the more important thing is once you bother to explain to them, that there are a lot of fundamental reasons why the market did well.
If fundamentals can support a strong market, then that's great. That's what we want to see.
And even people who are not particular supporters of the president will have to sit back and say, okay, I will admit he didn't do anything to screw it up, which, by the way, presidents do.
They absolutely can. And beyond not screwing it up, at least in the interim, his tax reform was a big part of what has driven this market.
Well, here's the big problem.
The expectation
of it. You brought it up, so I'm sorry, go
I
with
had
the,
to.
You brought it up, damn it. Now we're going to go with the major issue, and that's the issue of tax reform. It's not so much the issue is a large part of what was an extraordinary 2017 was based on speculation about tax reform.
It was the expectation of the tax reform. So it has already been priced in.
Is it priced in? And that's really where the question comes in. How much momentum is there from 2017 as we move into 18? I mean, let's face it, January was an extraordinary month. On last night's program, we were even talking about that old adage, as January goes, so goes the year. typically. And we actually said that if you look at the 10 times we had better than average Januaries, then the remaining 11 months of those years, going back to 1950, interestingly, the remaining 11 months were better than average, meaning if the average is between 9 and 10, they're talking better than average being about 12 and a half.
But let's remember that even when those remaining 11 months continue to produce a year that's better than average, that doesn't mean that every month is better. That doesn't mean that every month is positive, or every quarter, however you want to put it, because there can be volatility in between. How often do we get to the end of the year and say, hey, it was a great year, but then recall a client conversation midway through the year that involved someone wanting to jump ship, or question, you know, does this strategy make sense? What are stocks doing? Or are they just going to keep going down? Because there is intermittent volatility in the year. It is not a straight line up just because the year is positive.
Well, looking at the news, the way they presented it, said the S&P pulled back 1.1% with healthcare as the worst performing sector.
Yeah,
was there any news in the news around there about healthcare that might have gotten people's attention?
So last year we saw a really strong year for healthcare stocks. I think as a sector it was up between like 22 to 25% for the year. And this year none of the fundamentals had really changed, but there is some news. The first bit of news that we saw a little while back was when we saw CVS and Aetna combining. And that was really a new strategy. You saw companies that are typically on two different sides of the healthcare spectrum, one being in delivery and one being the insurer, combining. This is new, a new approach to healthcare. And now, just today, we saw an announcement between the CEOs. We saw Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan that they will be forming some sort of combined effort, combined entity to provide healthcare in a different way for at least for their own employees.
And well, it's a single payer model. And the way it was described, and of course, remember something, this is not a proposal. This was simply a statement of a plan that these three CEOs have been
intention.
Discussing.
Yes.
And they're saying, here's what we're thinking of doing. And that's actually taking the resources of all three companies with their roughly 1.2
which are significant
1.2 million employees and actually purchasing or creating a brand new healthcare company to provide broad-based services. And it's a company, I guess one of the elements that they thought was key to it was to create it as a not-for-profit company. In other words, so it would be provided,
which is also significant.
Which is significant,
yeah.
Because I imagine guys like
totally
guys like Aetna and Cigna and Blue
they have
Cross
shareholders to answer
everybody
to.
Everybody out there, they're all talking about this idea of competitiveness and everything else. Yeah, yeah, they all have to try to make a profit.
So the only competitive element here is, I would say, these CEOs being competing with themselves to bring the cost of healthcare down as much as they can. The whole point of this is to, thwart, the tapeworm that is rising healthcare costs. Is that what Warren Buffett said?
Well, and Buffett has said before, and Jeff Bezos said as part of this discussion, that if this model works well as we manage it for our own staffs, our own employees, then obviously we would be inclined to expand this single payer company into a broad based company and start offering the service to other corporations around the country.
You know what this is a private sector response to something that the government has tried to tackle, but because there's state issues, right? Insurance is a state issue, and then you do have both the private and public concerns here. It's something that has not been able to be done. So they're just taking this out, saying, as a nonprofit, we can control this to a degree and really look to bring healthcare costs down. It's innovative. It's different. It's thinking outside of the box.
Well, and it's taking healthcare in from the user end as opposed to the provider end.
Mm-hmm.
They said that they were even talking as part of general discussions with the good folks at Walmart, who actually have tried to handle their healthcare costs by simply making most of their employees ineligible for it.
Yeah.
But they probably would like to provide it for as many people as they possibly can. And if they have a model that works, they would probably be. And Walmart employs a lot of people.
I mean, there's a social welfare motivation behind this, right?
Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program. It's Get Back to Basics Tuesday on AM 790, your home of talking business with Donna Sowa Allard and me. I'm Don Sowa. We'll be right back.
Sponsored by United States Traffic Network. Looking to add your talent to a dynamic company? United States Traffic Network seeks a motivated account executive to join the sales team. Send your resume to ustrafficnetwork.com/careers.
At Pronzi, we've built our reputation providing an uncompromising level of service and elegance. Every detail carefully considered, whether it's a grand wedding or a holiday party. When the hard work of preparation is over, it's all about your celebration, the joy and laughter of each guest, the ultimate compliment of satisfaction. Add an extra dimension of quality, service, and value to your wedding. Call Pronzi Catering and Events today for a personal consultation. 401-383-3631 or visit pronzi.com.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program that's been around for 25 years, and they have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $1 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money. Think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have a lot to offer? Well, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
We will not be an easy target. We will never roll over and let pain plan our day. We will protect our bodies and fight back by moving. We will do our morning laps, walk our dogs around the block, pass up the elevator, and proudly take the stairs. Because arthritis can't beat us if we beat it first. In the fight against arthritis, you need a weapon. What's yours? To learn more, visit us at fightarthritispain.org. This message brought to you by the Arthritis Foundation and the Ad Council.
Kids have the craziest ideas about food. Where do they get this stuff? Like eating Brussels sprouts helps you hit home runs. And eating carrots gives you X-ray vision? It's nuts. And I honestly have no idea where my daughter got this notion that broccoli is the official food of professional ballerinas. Kids, the only reason my 4-year-old loves cantaloupe is because he's convinced it comes from the moon.
One small step for man, lots of potassium for mankind.
And the other day when my oldest came up to me and said, "Mom, will eating peas and carrots really help me pull off a fakie frontside ollie with a twist?" I look him in the eye and say, "It can't hurt, honey. It can't hurt."
Moms everywhere are finding creative ways to help their kids eat 5 servings of fruit and vegetables a day. Get ideas, get involved, get going at letsmove.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
This is Money Talk with Dawn Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program. I'm Dawn Sowa with my daughter, Donna Sowa Allard. For those of you who are new to this program, we are certified financial planner professionals. I've been doing the Money Talk program now. This is our 28th year
forever
on the air. Jeez, I'm only 27 years old. How's that even possible? Donna, you've been on the air now for a little while.
I have. I should know exactly how long it's been, but I think it's like three and a half years.
Three and a half, almost 4 years, yeah.
LinkedIn told me that I celebrated my 12th anniversary at our company the other day. So LinkedIn is really making me feel high maintenance now because
they know stuff.
Because it tells me this, and then all of these people are emailing me to say happy 12th anniversary.
Oh.
And I was like, is someone going to send me cake? Like, do I get cake? I really felt like I deserved
something. Well, somebody brought you candy, though,
today. I did. A client brought me candy today, and I actually thought of that. I was like, well, I didn't get cake, but I got chocolate today.
Candy's good? Chocolate
candy?
Why not? We were mentioning early on that the move that we saw in the market today, yesterday the market was down 177 points on the back of, and then they weren't really talking healthcare yesterday. They were really talking about interest rates.
Interest rates. The 10-year went up, and that pushed stocks lower.
Why is that?
So people have an it doesn't always happen this way, which I think is really important to note. But there is an expectation when you see the long yield go up that we may see pressure on stocks to go down because interest rates are higher. It can provide It may be an impetus for people to be borrowing less, spending less, and also for companies as well. So that's part of it. However, it doesn't always happen that way. And actually, I should have prepared data for it. But I know if you look back historically, you can see periods where stocks actually did well, even in a rising interest rate environment.
Well, the when you talk to people like I'm having had the opportunity to listen to speeches by former Fed chairs like Paul Volcker and Alan Greenspan and Ben Bernanke, they've always said that the raising of rates is not what causes declines in stocks or the potential for recessions. It's the pace at which you do it.
Sure.
And the markets themselves ultimately don't like surprises. So they've always counseled subsequent people like Janet Yellen, who is our now outgoing, about to retire. The Fed chair, she'll be actually presiding over her last Fed meeting coming up this month in February. And they've said that you need to give the markets, especially the fixed income and bond markets, you need to give these markets plenty of heads up, transparency.
And that was the word that really began being implemented when Ben Bernanke came in. One of his specific things he wanted to do was create some transparency in the Fed to help the markets, because if you remember, he was coming in at a time of quantitative easing, and then towards the end the talk was, well, when do the tightening start? And so Janet Yellen has really moved forward or continued his level of transparency, and they really have telegraphed pretty clearly what they were going to be doing, the pace at which they were going to do it. That's why when you when we talk to economists and people from fund companies who offer us good research, there really is a pretty much a general consensus that doesn't vary too much. Most people expected roughly the three rate hikes last year, and expectation is for probably that again, and you don't hear too much different than that.
By the way, just so you know, three rate hikes is only 0.75 points.
In the way that they are doing it. Small increments, at this rate is okay. It's not like when we saw in 2006, was it, when we saw much higher rate hikes, we saw it go up a much more significant amount in the same amount of time.
Now, what you have to also understand is that the interest rates can rise not by direct decision or movement by the Federal Reserve. The markets themselves will drive assets higher based on a number of different things. And like I said, the benchmark bond, that fixed income instrument that people look at, is the 10-year U.S. Treasury. A great many other types of things, such as mortgage rates and credit card rates and a great many others, all seem to piggyback on the activity that the 10-year Treasury will embrace. And really, we started out the year, the benchmark started the year trading right around 2.4%, and now we're above 2.7. That's a pretty, that's a pretty major move, a 30 basis point move.
It doesn't sound like a big move, but it's relative. It's all relative. And if you
it gets us back to yields, interestingly enough, that are around 2014 levels.
I'm going to say,
But now, the funny thing, I say that, but I can remember when the 10-year was trading at greater than 5%.
But the expectation is not for it to, we talk about, reversion to the mean or whatever, but we don't expect the 10-year to be back at 4%, not anytime soon. The expectation is for it to be right around where it is right now.
Now, by the way, folks, just so you can put this in proper context, not everybody follows the 10-year Treasury who listens to the show. I get that. But I'll bet there's something you do follow. That is, somebody who is complaining about or talking about the rate on CDs at your local bank or credit union. And when the last time I looked, when I did a little bit of research, it was, a 10-year Treasury paying 5%. That was the last time we also saw a 12-month to 18-month CD at a bank or other institution that was paying 4.5% to 4.6%. Mm-hmm. So there is a little bit of correlation between the two. But again, ask yourself, when was the last time you saw a bank CD nearly 5%? It was a while.
I mean, how often is it that you hear people say, I'm looking to do better than I can do with the bank. I don't want to take a whole lot of risk with this, portion of my money, but I want to just do a little bit better than I can do at the bank. And people are happy to find some sort of, ultra short duration bond fund where they can probably expect an average of 1.7% to 2.2% on. You know, since when is that exciting?
So ultimately, you know? What we will be, people like Donna and I, and of course we'll share this with you here on Money Talk each night, discussions of this. The big issue will be, and it's something that I have been looking to as a risk metric. But unfortunately, I'm one of those people that gets things right, but not necessarily, I don't necessarily time it perfectly. I've been talking over 2 years for thinking that one of the primary risks that we had to structure our allocations for was inflation. There has, despite my counseling and, by the way, my fear of inflation or my concern about it, is, at least is from a money management perspective, is well-founded because, I mean, when you're looking at $4 trillion on
when
the
when rates are as low as they have been.
For as long as they have been, and the Fed fund rate, because they've been borrowing, they've been buying bonds in the open market in order to bring those rates down. It has been wonderful, and it's really how we got pulled, how the Federal Reserve under monetary policy pulled us out of the recession that we were in back in 07 and 08. So the period that has followed has gotten us the average of a 2% GDP growth rate, roughly, over this time frame, and the market has accompanied that. So we've enjoyed an 8 or 9 year period of stable growth. I'm not saying robust, but certainly stable growth and a stable, growing, relatively productive stock market over this last 8 year period. And yes, what we saw last year was a burst of activity with that, based on the speculation of what a pro-business, pro-growth environment under a new administration could represent. So markets turn to what we call speculation, rather than looking solely at the fundamentals, which have been growing this market.
Which still would have resulted in positive
returns. Growing this market nicely in that 6 to 8% range on average over that time frame, which has been wonderful. And it pulled us out, quite frankly, more quickly than some people expected from a regular, rather ugly bear market in 08. Where the market, depending upon where you were invested and how much, you could have lost as much as 44 to 50% of your money if you were in 100% of the stocks in the right places.
Or the wrong places.
I don't think most people who manage money seriously, and certainly firms like ours, which manage other people's money, so you have to take it very seriously, didn't, you know, I don't know anybody personally who lost, you know, over 40% of their money. But then again, we would never have all of our money in just the stock market. There's certainly a lot of other choices to have in a well-diversified portfolio.
A great reminder of why you should never be happy with everything that's in your portfolio at any given point in time, right?
Did you make that up?
I did not, and neither did you.
And neither did I. No, I had a professor once tell me that if you are happy with every holding you have in your investment portfolio, then you have an improperly allocated portfolio.
Because if everything is up, that means it is all correlated highly correlated.
You have everything in one basket, as he put it.
Then it's all going to go down together, probably.
He said, you put that basket out on the front porch of your farm and a tornado comes through, guess what? You lose the entire basket all at once. He said, so diversification doesn't mean having 10 baskets out there. It means having 10 baskets, but putting one of them in the barn, leaving one of them in the house, sticking one in the basement. One is in the shed. In other words, you're putting it in places that are not going to be affected identically. And that's what real asset allocation is about. The issue related to what we're looking at is that, yes, the market has run up. And by the way, people say, oh, well, the market's at an all-time high. Well, you know something? Almost each and every day it's at an all-time high.
Well, today it's not at an all-time high.
Well, the last 2 days we broke back. And actually, so now we will have another opportunity to move up, say, 500 points or so to get us back to an all-time high.
Before we have to hear that again.
Before we have to hear those numbers again. Stifel & Company, one of the investment firms, a strategist named Barry Bannister, he predicted that the Federal Reserve, through its policies, sometimes misplaced policies, is going to, in his opinion, possibly cause a correction, maybe even in the first quarter of this year, as it leads other central banks into tighter monetary policy, which would mean raising interest rates. Mm-hmm. The Fed kicked off its latest two-day monetary policy meeting today, as a matter of fact. Market expectations for a rate hike are not particularly high at this particular meeting. But as Donna mentioned just a minute ago, that there is general consensus, pretty high percentage expectation that they will raise rates in 3 1/4 point moves for a total of
75 basis points before the end of the year.
Yeah.
But Bob, we got a while to do that.
Yeah, Bob Pavlik, who's another investment strategist that's out there, does not think this is the start of any kind of a major pullback at this particular point, what we saw the last 2 days. He believes that people are looking for an excuse to actually take some profits, which is perfectly fine. As Jim Cramer says, he says he doesn't know anybody who's ever actually lost any money by taking profits. Now, if you do it at the wrong time and in the wrong way and too much of it, you may pay some taxes. Also, you may lose the opportunity value of having stayed in the market at a strategic moment. But then again, how do you know that?
And that's one thing. People always get caught up in momentum, right? Or people often, I should say, get caught up in momentum. Do you want to keep riding it out or have you made enough?
Well, Pavlik said that this is the first wave we've seen of any kind of selling in a very long time. And he added that this kind of selling pressure could present a buying opportunity for investors who have actually cash on the sidelines. And believe me, there's a lot of cash on the sidelines right now. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program with Donna Soa Allard and Don Soa. That's me. We're going to take a quick break here on the Get Back to Basics show, and we'll be right back. So please stick around.
Would your business survive a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Selfless service is the guiding principle that drives Army National Guard soldiers to be always ready whenever disaster strikes. Every Army National Guard member serves not only to protect the nation, but also their local communities, so they each have a stake in the security and well-being of the neighborhoods where they live and work. They are your next-door neighbors and your colleagues in schools, offices, and factories. Since the early days of our republic, the Army National Guard has continued its timeless commitment to guarantee peace and security for all Americans, a proud legacy which has endured for nearly four centuries. To be a Guard soldier is to stand ready to serve at all times for family, for community, and for country. Selfless service, it's what inspires the men and women of the Army National Guard to be part of something greater than themselves. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com or contact an Army National Guard recruiter in your area.
Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
Start the fun. Start the excitement. It's the Northeast International Auto Show
at the Rhode Island Convention Center, Friday, February 9th through the 11th.
Start your imagination.
Check out over 250 of the hottest new cars, new trucks, and SUVs.
Come see the ultra-exotic car collection,
courtesy of the Audrain Automobile Museum. These are some of the coolest cars on the planet. See pre-production models.
And it's all displayed in a non-selling environment.
You can even test drive vehicles from Toyota, Chrysler, Dodge, Fiat, Jeep, and Ram truck. And every day is Family Day. All kids 12 and under get in free. Every attendee gets a free 12-month subscription to Motor Trend.
The Northeast International Auto Show is where the excitement starts.
The 9th through the 11th at the Rhode Island Convention Center. Go to ProvidenceAutoShow.com for discounts. This auto show is presented by the Rhode Island Automobile Dealers Association and is produced by Motor Trend, so you know it's going to be good. Come for the cars, stay for the fun.
There's good news in the fight against breast cancer. Deaths from this disease are actually declining. Declining because more women are going through cancer screenings, which detect the disease at its earliest and most curable stages. October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Women over 40 should schedule their annual mammograms now. And if you're a woman of any age and are at risk, talk to your doctor about annual mammograms. You can find easy-to-understand information from the Radiological Society of North America at www.radiologyinfo.org.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program. It's Get Back to Basics Tuesday with Don Soa and Donna Soa Allard. We were talking a little bit about that one key sector that seemed to mess things up today, especially. As of the close on Monday, interestingly, healthcare was on a pace for its actually best monthly performance since October of 1999. So that went 18 years ago, the best monthly performance. When it actually that year, it gained 10.98% in the month of October, that one month.
Except that 99 was an anomaly. Can we accept
it was
that?
An anomaly. So today, the sector fell 2.1%. The healthcare sector. In economic news, consumer confidence rose a bit in the month of January. The number that you look at is 125.4. Now, that number doesn't mean anything to anybody, except the fact that if you knew that break even, which is sort of the half level, is like about the number 100. So at 125.4, that means that it's going up. The consumer confidence is high. Americans expect the U.S. economic momentum from last year. This is what kind of what we were talking about to carry over into this year. And you asked that question when we first brought it up in the first segment. You say, well, is the tax cut and expectations for repatriation of capital from overseas, which is a big element of that,
certainly.
Was that already built into the extraordinary performance of the fourth quarter last year? And is that carrying over? Has it already been built in, or is there still a ways to go? And my answer to it would be probably some elements of the tax cut probably have already been petered out. I don't think, in other words, they don't carry much momentum. But the repatriation of corporate dollars from global companies that are chartered in the U.S. but that are doing tremendous amounts of business overseas. And there are companies that we know, even, you know, I didn't even realize, even Disney does over half of their annual revenue outside
overseas.
The United States.
Well, you know, the kicker will be if, and I don't know why it wouldn't happen. It doesn't make sense to me on any level why companies that have, you know, millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars overseas wouldn't repatriate them at 15%, right? It doesn't make sense to not do it. Right, for the most part.
Well, somebody was saying, I forget they were looking at every country that you do business in, whether it's France or Germany or Italy or whatever, Great Britain, Japan even, but look at the Asian markets. They will have their own tax level of between 15 and 20%, sometimes a little bit higher. The Northern European countries that are socialist by design will have slightly higher tax levies on corporations, especially those that are chartered outside their country. But so if you were a company like Apple, who has over $350 billion on their balance sheet in foreign that are held outside the U.S. So if they were to repatriate all of their foreign capital, that's just surplus capital that's not already designated for projects, that would be around $350 billion. And of that, the U.S. Treasury, given that our new rate dropped from 35 as a marginal rate for corporations down to 21. Now, I know the president wanted 15, but he didn't get that for practical reasons. But roughly at this level, you're talking about the Treasury now receiving and holding over $70 billion of cash from Apple alone. So I thought it was interesting when they looked at, they were looking at the top 100 corporations.
Can we fix Social Security?
Top 100 corporations outside the U.S., and they're looking at $4 trillion.
Is what they're expecting to repatriate.
So if that's the case, and they're able to get 20 or 21% of that, so you're looking at $800 billion.
Which is a significant amount of
money. Now, that money would be the capital that would be spread out over a three-year period. But even with that, you're looking at nearly $300 billion a year. I imagine that there's a number of programs and projects that the government would like to earmark that money for. The question is, will they do it judiciously? And here's where the great fear is. They says, given the Trump administration, they're not quite sure how he's going to prioritize. I mean, anybody who's willing to spend $25 billion on a wall, you don't know where the money's going to go. So, I mean, a lot of people say that the answer to our competitiveness worldwide, which also is a national security issue, could be answered by more commitment to education. In other words, you were throwing a number at me earlier about the number of American adults over the age of 25
who
have college degrees.
If you consider adults to be those over 25, something like 34% of Americans over the age of 25 hold a bachelor's degree or more. That really surprised me. I was thinking more, but then I stopped again and realized that it's not 34% of Generation X. It's not 34% of Generation Y. It's also including some much older generations. If you consider the greatest generation, many of whom are still alive, many did not go to college. If you consider older, there are a lot of older people who did not get a college education yet led very productive lives and had well-paying jobs.
Well, they had some of the, great many people in my father's generation. Among the most successful, I was thinking to myself, yes, I think of my father's friends, and he used to call them the Polish Mafia.
Yes,
because they all lived in Pawtucket and Central Falls. And by the way, their families, their parents all came over from the old country.
They all went to St. Joseph's Church.
We all went to the PA Vets on after the church on Sundays for kielbasa sandwiches and kapusta. But the interesting thing was now a group of them did go on to become. Some of them became doctors, and some of them became dentists, and a few became lawyers. But as my father pointed out to me, he says, you know, the most successful of us were not the ones that went to college, but the ones that started businesses.
And so that's what I'm saying is there where I feel like for my generation there and for my children's generation, there's kind of just this expectation that you go to college. After high school, you go to college. That was not the expectation for previous generations.
Well, it's funny because we were talking to... my uncle Vin, your great or great uncle, who actually chose a long career in the military.
Yes,
which was wonderful for him and our aunt Joan, and their family. But it was extraordinary use of that type of career. He went to Providence College, was in the ROTC, went on to serve in the Army for a great many years, and was a full bird colonel when he retired. But he would say that when I was talking to him about this very issue about families and who the most successful of the generation, of the people we knew. Now, this may not be broad-based, but he said, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. He said, we are in a period now where baby boomers, the younger of us, the youngest of this group, we are the ones that ushered in a new era of technology. A technology-based economy, and unfortunately, we also pushed out because of the quality of standard of living in the U.S. that we expected. We pushed manufacturing offshore. The end result was we couldn't afford to make the products in the U.S. anymore because we couldn't pay $18, $22 per hour with benefits for a worker to make that table, that coffee table or that side chair. Instead, even guys like Warren Buffett, who owns a very, very large furniture manufacturing facility, he ended up having to close two of them in the United States and open two very large plants in with the same equipment, but in Vietnam, of all places. He says, why? Because the people could just as easily be trained to run the machinery, but over there, the same people making those same coffee tables and end tables for a major, very well-known manufacturer, one of those names that I'm not saying this particular, but if you said Broyhill, people would recognize the name, but it's that type of a name. Mm-hmm. And he said it's including the required health care benefits and everything else that the country of Vietnam requires. He says it's less than $7 an hour with everything for those employees. He says we can't compete at that level. He says, but by the way, we did it ourselves. He says we had an expectation of what the quality of life for the manufacturing employee, what that quality of life should be. And unions were part of that, but they came into it because under the old robber baron mindset, they said the owners of these plants that were not publicly traded at the time, you know, would pay as little as physically possible. So the union movement came into place. But then at some point, the quality of life and the standard of living got to a point where expectations were so high that the rate of compensation for all things, including health care, an increasingly expensive concept, and pension planning and everything else, started to take over. So it pushed it into that range where we could no longer compete worldwide for the same types of jobs. He says that typically happened. But technology, we're that innovative group. Now you have a new generations, whether it's the Xers or the millennials like yourselves, stepping in even more and more. And now you're bringing in even areas where the tech job that was done by a person is going to be done by robots and other innovations along those lines. It makes a wonderful world in real terms the way things are done, but it's this issue of innovation.
Well, it means people need to be willing to evolve. Remember the story? I don't know if it was Virginia or West Virginia, but they were talking about how the company, there were major layoffs, and they had come in and offered free education and training in a variety of technical jobs. And the guy on the news was interviewed, and he said, I'm not taking it. I don't want to do it. Trump is bringing back coal mining. He's bringing it back to our area. It, completely like disillusioned, completely like not realizing that his job wasn't lost because of someone's policy or moving overseas. It's lost to technology in a move towards cleaner energy.
There's no demand for coal. That's
They're not coming up. You need to be willing to adapt to a new economy and to new jobs.
They said the 12 largest power facilities of the United States, they said they only two of them still remain in not only fully but partially using coal in the burners. They said they've all switched over to natural gas and mm-hmm. other types of, like you said, cleaner, more efficient technology out there. But Uncle Vin had said, he said that the group of people who were not college educated from the great generation that you're talking mm-hmm. about, they said what they did was they were the first generation to really, really bring entrepreneurial spirit
so they had
to the
skills
system.
And entrepreneurial skills and spirit
and a desire to work, the desire to work and the willingness to work very, very hard and to take risks, even at that particular level. And, you know, generationally, the country and our economy changes rather mm-hmm. substantially, and it will continue to do so. One of the things we can do is to understand how that works, and as investors, to take it to be participate, even if we're not going to participate as the employee or the person starting the business, we can participate with those companies as investors.
As a shareholder, yeah.
And we'll talk about that here on the Money Talk program. We're going to take a quick break here to close out tonight's Get Back to Basics program with Donna Allard and Don Sowa. We'll be right back with more on AM 790, your home of talking business.
Sponsored by Tax Doctor. Owe the IRS $10,000 or more? Call the Tax Doctor to settle tax debt for less. 800-542-9112. 800-542-9112.
When antibiotics aren't needed, they won't help you, and the side effects could still hurt you. Don't share. Think twice. Seek advice. Antibiotics aren't always the answer. Only take antibiotics a health professional has prescribed. Be antibiotics aware. Visit health.ri.gov/antibiotics. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Department of Health and the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program that's been around for 25 years, and they have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $1 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money. Think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have a lot to offer? Well, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
Endometriosis is a chronic medical condition that can lead to severe pain and infertility. Endometriosis affects more than 5 million women in the U.S. and Canada. Hello, I'm Mary Brooks Beatty, President of Women in Government, an organization of state policymakers. We want to tell you that endometriosis can be treated. Talk to your doctor about medical therapies or surgery for this serious condition that occurs in the uterus. To learn more, visit womeningovernment.org. That's womeningovernment.org.
This is Money Talk with Dawn Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
I saw a Cadillac sign say, no money down. So I eased on my brakes, and I pulled in the drive.
Who picks this song? This must be Maya. She's our crazy producer over there. Well, anyway.
Well, that's fun. Yeah. Thanks, Maya.
We used to have that old Beatles number. Money, that's all I want. That's all I want, yeah. That's all I want.
Everyone is really grateful they just got to hear you sing.
Oh, yeah, they're really grateful. There was a time when it was.
You have a beautiful voice. You have a beautiful
Christmas
voice.
Carols. Go to Christmas carols. You know, the president is dealing, obviously, tonight the big issue will be, and I'm sure everybody will be talking about it endlessly, analyzing today and tomorrow.
He basically said, get your popcorn, is what he said. He said it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, it's a great show. It'll be the his first speech laying out his view of the state of our current union. I don't know. I'm trying to think back to other presidents, how much of their focus has been on well, how was the year that has just gone by? So what is the state of our current union? Or was it really more, I'm going to outline and lay out for you what this upcoming year will be? But I think
he'll hear himself pat himself on the back for the state of the economy, certainly, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Certainly. And supposedly he's going to talk about a proposal for laying out a path for citizenship.
One of the things that I realize that the relationship that the president has with the media is dubious at best. But I have been noticing as we are winding down, approaching this particular speech, which we know the president is going to do an awful lot of that, the term that they like to use is a lap, to do the
victory lap.
The victory lap.
Yes.
And he likes to do that. He likes to routinely do that. And if he did more and more of it, then he avoided those cheeseburgers and everything at McDonald's, he probably, the doctor would be happier with him. But, I mean, in the end, what I have noticed, though, in fairness to the media, at least somebody has to be fair to the media, right? When they do talk about things that they expect him to say, even though he may be bragging about having doing this and doing that, they feel the need to say, which is correct, that Trump inherited a recovering economy that has been in recovery for a while, that has momentum of its own, as well as a market that reflected that. But he obviously the pace of the market picked up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Here, in that, in the short term, for this president to brag about the performance of the economy and the market during this 12-month period, I've heard a number of different commentators state that he deserves some kudos for that.
Of course, he deserves some of the credit.
Some kudos for that. The only thing that's problematic is that we know that whenever there's a change in fiscal or monetary policy, it takes between 6 and 9 months for the actual change to find itself. Quantifiable.
When we talk about the tax reform being priced in, that is exactly what we're talking about. So any positive market movement that we have seen based on the expectation of tax reform has nothing to do with the results of. It has to do with the expectation of the results of the reform. It has not infiltrated the system yet. It has not gotten through the system. Or trickled down, as one might say.
A lot of the things that Donna and I and Steve Beauvais have talked about on this program, especially over the last several weeks, related to tax policy and other specific pro-business reform programs, reductions in certain types of regulations, and a few other things that all of which are touted as pro-business, the impact of them, it's premature to say mm-hmm. that the numbers you're looking at today reflect those particular changes in regulation, those particular changes in monetary or fiscal policy. There are things that may come as 2018 progresses, as we move into the second half of the year. There are a lot of very, very reasonable and thoughtful people who are strategists, analysts, and commentators that Donna and Steve and I look to for sources of information, for sources of opinion. We never find any one philosophy, no one person, no one Nobel Prize winner in economics that we constantly will quote, except for those people that have that extraordinary ease of description, the ones that come up with phrases that are just so meaningful that it's so easy to use their phrases. Peter Lynch from Fidelity, when he managed the Magellan Fund, Peter is one of those people, he's written a few books too, that does that. He has those phrases mm-hmm. that people will remember. But
they stick.
But they stick in your mind. They're things that they will remember.
And that's no mistake.
That's a unique thing. He's a great money manager. But in some basic things, sometimes he'll say something, and they'll say, this is the underlying piece of my philosophy that you need to know if you want to be a reasonably successful stock picker. Mm-hmm. He says, don't pick stocks.
I say, I'm not a stock picker.
He says, don't pick stocks. He says, pick companies. So if you're looking for individual stocks like that, no, pick companies and then learn about the companies. He says, I only invested, just if you're curious, and he says, I probably had 3 or 4 winners out of every 10 stocks I picked. He says, I'm telling you the truth. Yet it was those, when I had a year where I got 3 or 4 winners out of 10, that was a year where the Magellan Fund did 16 to 17% return. He says, that's what you need to do. He says, so forget about, you're not going to get out there with some brilliant philosophy or some brilliant program for your computer that's going to pick everything correctly for you. But he says, study the companies. Buy only what you know. And also, don't buy simply great or interesting companies. Buy important companies. Ask yourself, how would the world be? How will this market be? How will this country be if this company suddenly went out of existence? Is there somebody ready right away to step right in and take over that market?
Wasn't that one of the comments that we heard from a fund manager? I don't remember what fund it was, but they were looking at either large cap growth or large blend and saying, I only buy companies who one of the screens we use is, can anybody repeat what they are doing within 5 years? And if they can't, we know that this is one we want.
This is why they said use buy important companies. Now, again, this year, I believe, and a number of the people that Donna and I and Steve are talking to, believe that 2018 is going to be a better than average performing year for the stock market, which probably means we don't get a full-blown bear market. But you could get a pullback. You could even get a 10% correction. Mm-hmm. That doesn't, I mean, and by the way, that would be driven not by market or economic conditions, because the economy, the fundamentals are good. In the market, as much as we keep talking about all-time highs, is not at outrageously high numbers. We're not looking like in 2000 at a PE of 60 to 65. Okay? So that said, though, you're going to deal with a lot of volatility. And a lot of volatility comes because of the uncertainty of the political environment. And that's not a criticism of the Republicans or the Democrats or the president. That's to say that there's going to be enough debate related to things like NAFTA. Those negotiations, the president keeps talking about negotiating the deal. Yes, there's stuff going on behind the scenes, but he hasn't even become directly involved in it yet. So we'll have to wait and see how that shakes out. Even some different version of the TPC, Trans-Pacific Partnership,
TPP.
Trans-Pacific
Partnership, yep.
That may be revised as well. Don't be surprised. All of this stuff may be just ultimately gamesmanship, and I'd love for the president to be right about that. I'd love for him to come back and say, we got a better deal, we're back in, we're doing it right. But it's going to be because of what we don't know that you're going to get ongoing volatility from time to time, which could lead to more than one pullback, maybe a 3-4% pullback. We just saw that yesterday and today.
It wouldn't be unrealistic for us to see an actual correction at some point this year. If it's 2.7 years on average that we have a pullback, it has been about 2 years since we've had a correction.
But we've also seen pullbacks and corrections in years where at the end of the year the market was up over 7 or 8%.
Absolutely.
And if you get that's better than the average 6% that we've been talking about all along. So don't lose faith, pay attention, listen to the Money Talk program.
Absolutely.
And continue and allow Money Talk and other resources to be just part of your ongoing education, because education is what will make you a better informed investor, and that will hopefully make you a happier consumer. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for tuning into the Money Talk program tonight. Donna Allard and I are delighted that you shared your drive time with us. This is, in fact, your Get Back to Basics program. Tune in tomorrow. I will also be here one more time filling in for Steve. I got Steve's son, Nathan. He brings in the research. We have some additional information on the gold and silver standard that we didn't have a chance to talk about in our last show.
Maybe,
we may be dealing with it then.
So maybe he can tell you about his trip to New Orleans.
Oh, geez, we'll have to wait and see. Hey, folks, thanks so much. Have a wonderful evening.
My number two does not look like a number two. I don't know what to call it. Is there a number three?